Hey, and welcome to Breaking Bread, hosted by me, Crunk Chocolate, a show where we break verbal bread with the quote-unquote enemy. Whenever Manchester City has an upcoming match, I will be here having a conversation with a supporter of City's upcoming opponent. Shout out to all those watching on YouTube, Twitch, and even you on X/Twitter. I'm trying to update it. I'm going to start saying X first, but I still got to recognize Twitter because, you know, that's what everybody calls it. Subscribe to the channel if you're watching on YouTube. Even if you're watching on Twitter, you know, hop onto our YouTube channel, Shades of Blue Network. Hit that thumbs up, like the video. To all you lovelies who are watching the replay, you're like, hey, it's 1 p.m. right now in the U.S. I can't quite make it, but I got you later. And here you are. So hi, thank you, appreciate you. And all those listening to the DSPs on the pods, you know, you prefer audio only. All of you, the love, the lights of ours. Thank you for supporting. But Sunday, we are here for Sunday. Manchester City, they travel to take on the bad boys of the Premier League, Nottingham Forest, breaking spending rules, admitting, I will admit, that, you know, you're just not as allowed to spend as much in the championship. So that kind of hindered them a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, I want to be spicy, but also, like, don't want to insult our guest immediately. So, like, acknowledgement. Yeah. We've got Nottingham Forest's Twitter admin fighting at the power, calling out the system.
We do, yeah.
My guy. But can the players on the pitch focus, force into a relegation battle, whilst facing an opponent who needs to win in order to lift a fourth Premier League title in a row? Plenty to discuss, Shady Gang. Our guest comes from Mist Rolling In Podcast. Side note, fantastic name. Give it up for Jacob. Yay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
How's it going? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. It's 7 o'clock here. I live in Nottingham, so I'm about 5 miles away from the ground is where I live. Weather's nice, spring's come in, so yeah, everything's cooking with gas.
Wait, sorry, that actually went over my head. What was that euphemism?
Cooking with gas.
You're cooking with gas. Oh, okay. Sorry. I don't know. For some reason, it went over. I was like, wait, what? I just love the word choices and how they're paired.
Yeah,
the English you use all the time. So whenever there's a new one, I try to like log it in and somehow use it.
Love
the way you guys use words.
In Nottingham, we don't really have an accent. We tend to use funny words, if that makes sense. People from Birmingham or Liverpool or Leeds or places like that, they have a very distinct accent. I don't think people from Nottingham, it's more of a, apparently we tend to say things all in one breath. So we'll say,
good to know. All right. let's start here though. First question of the show, it's the easiest. I'm sure the answer is, because it usually is for you lots, you Brits, that the fandom was just handed down to you. Entire family is part of the Red Forest, but you know, you never know. How did you become a fan of Nottingham Forest?
So same thing. So my dad's a Forest fan. He grew up 200 yards from the ground, sneaking in for free when he was a little kid. My mum's a Forest fan as well. All my family, uncles, aunties, etc. And then I was born on May 18th to 1991, which was FA Cup final day when Forest played Tottenham. So my dad was sat in the hospital with me in one arm and two tickets in the other. so we missed that game, which Forest did lose to Spurs. But yeah, so I was born the day they played the FA Cup final.
Do I see my kid? Do I go to the game?
Yes, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Well, it's good to see that he made the right choice.
Yeah, and I suppose at the time we were going to Wembley quite often, so probably didn't feel like it'd be. Well, I think we went one more time after that until we won the playoff final 2 seasons ago.
Actually, let's start it here because you guys are almost kind of like the not the flip, but when we were real down, you guys were pretty up, and then you had to drop and you're trying to make it back up now. But the idea are like people who kind of try to hate on you guys about being kind of lower tier, but you have some very solid history, European history.
Yeah.
And so like, is that something that you guys hold in your pocket, or do you kind of just let people talk smack? Like how do you handle banter as a Forest fan?
Anyone who's not familiar with the history of Forest, I would highly recommend watching a documentary called I Believe in Miracles. It's great music, great footage, interviews with all the players and everything like that. But it basically covers off Brian Clough becoming Forest manager in 1975 and Forest going on to win what is now the Championship. So it was Division 2 at the time, getting promoted, winning the Premier League the season after. Season after that, winning the Champions League, and the season after that, winning the Champions League again. And it covers off all that, and it's you know, not to blow our own trumpet, but it's an amazing watch. And I feel like, you know, as long as you don't support Derby, who are our rivals, you will enjoy that documentary. Who is right, yeah. But yeah, I feel like that would give anyone a good grounding in Nottingham Forest and appreciation for our history. But we used to be quite guilty of. It was very much in our hand. We very much played that card immediately, you know, two European Cups, you know, probably arguably the greatest miracle in football, certainly in our opinion. But I feel like in the last few years, we've managed to get back to the Premier League and all that kind of thing. We were a bit more reserved. We're a bit more happy to kind of go on current achievements rather than past ones.
That's fair. All right, let's talk about transfers.
Okay.
Let's just get into the spice immediately, I guess. The last few seasons, Nottingham Forest have brought in whole squadrons of players. Mm. And I know the hope was to find ones who would work and then send off the ones who didn't, hopefully with some profit. Lots of names I'm familiar with, and many I'm not, but I'll say the ones that I am.
Sankai,
Elanga, Woods, Tavares, Hudson, Odoi, Matt Turner, Origi, Gio Reyna. Shout out to USA, also Matt Turner. Anyway, but if I'm to be honest, this list of names I said gives reclamation projects, Nottingham Forest House of Abandoned Footballers vibes.
Yeah.
Taking one or two gambles, you know, like that's needed, especially when coming up and trying to establish yourself in the Premier League. But starting 11, a big risk. High reward players, it sounds incredibly stressful to me, but this is me from the outside looking in. That's why I'm here getting asked to ask you these questions. When Nottingham Forest started bringing in all of these players, were there alarm bells going off immediately, or were you just enjoying the ride?
So I think a key point that I think most outside of the club won't recognize is that when we actually got promoted via the playoffs, I think it was either five or six of our starting 11 from the playoff final were all on loan, and none of them joined permanently. So that's half the first 11 that's gone. And they were like with players like Jed Spence, who's now at Genoa, Philip Zincanalo, who's back in Belgium, Keenan Davis is playing for Udinese, I think, in Italy. These were key players. I think Max Lowe is still at Sheffield United. So we basically we had a number of players leave. Lewis Graben, who was our captain, went to go and play in Qatar, I think, and stuff like that. So we actually had a full rebuild on. So I think at first, nobody was surprised within Forest that we had to do this. I think it's more the monetary value of what we were spending was the surprise and what we managed to get up to, especially that first season. I think we spent around 150 million and signed 30 players, if you include January. I mean, no, we got like Keylor Navas on loan, Felipe from Atletico Madrid. I think the chairman needs his commendation for actually putting his hand in his pocket and you know, spending. I just think there's a bit of disruption in the background of the club that didn't really help when it comes to what we were spending it on.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it was. It felt all over the place.
Yes.
Because, I mean, some of these pickups I really enjoy. Like, I see why you would bring in Elanga, because he just needs more time actually playing, and he's a baller. Yeah. Tavares, Hudson-Odoi, if he can figure out himself, I get all of it on paper, but it just it felt crazy. It felt weird. And yeah. I'm hoping for the best. Our Shades of Blue were a little bit over 2 years, but Nottingham Forest, I was watching from the jump when I just kept seeing him bring all these players, and I kept talking about it.
Yeah.
And all my show bros are like, bro, it's Nottingham Forest. Why do you care? And I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's weird. Like, how do they get away with this? Like, are they making money like this? Does Nottingham Forest, just every person in Nottingham just buying 4 kits? Like, is there something I'm missing?
Yeah, it's a really valid point, especially when we look at it now. So we've been told at numerous points in, you know, like fan forums and things like that, where we are on board, we were on track for FFP and the P and R, I can't remember the actual acronym, but to basically not fail and not get punished. Mm-hmm. And then I think it came as a bit of a surprise, because basically what happened is in the summer, Brentford made a bid of $35 million for Brendan Johnson, which we rejected because it wasn't enough. And he also didn't want to leave. Then he didn't actually leave and go to Tottenham until the last day of the transfer window. So 2 months later, we got an extra $17.5 million, I think, or $12.5 million, I can't remember which way around it is. And he wanted to go there, which is fair enough. You know, wonderful player, all the best. But that 2 months in between the first bid from Brentford and him actually going to Tottenham is where we breached. So I think that's where we were probably hoping we'd get a bit more leeway with the rules. Still breached, still broke them. You know, we have to take the points, that's fine. But I did think we'd only get a fine. Or a kind of suspended sentence.
Yeah, and what's so crazy about all of that is whoever is like the spokesperson, I was reading about it, they were like, you know, we really didn't want to have to give them the point deduction because they followed directions, they participated incredibly.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just, if we didn't, it would look weird to everybody else, and we can't give them any. It's like, or you could just not. You could just give them the fine and be like, hey, because they participated, because they were so great, and we understand how this can mess up, just fine you. Like, you could easily do that. I hate when they beat you and it's like, I'm doing this for you. And it's like, you're not.
I think they went over the top with the initial Everton deduction. So Everton got 10 points, didn't they? And I think that was way over the top. And I think they set a bad precedence then. If Everton got 10 points for one breach that they admitted, I think they're not coming for a scalp with Man City. I think they're coming for the whole head, aren't they? Which I personally think will be the downfall of the Premier League. I think if the 115 charges are successful, City will pack up their ball and they'll stop the Super League. And teams like Juventus, who have no money, teams like Barcelona, who have no money, will join them. If Barcelona join them, Real Madrid will join them because there's no one else to play in La Liga. PSG will play them, will join them, and all these other teams. So I think that's a bad thing if the Premier League win the 115 charges against Man City. And I think if they don't win the 115 charges against Man City, they've just lost all credibility, haven't they?
Yeah.
Can't charge anyone else.
And I think they gave Everton such a heavy-handed ruling thinking about Man City and nobody else. Like, I in all of these rules that they have made ever since Manchester City was purchased, they have not always, but they have often been made and adjusted and tweaked to potentially come at City or teams like City. So I don't want to say specifically City, but teams like City. And now it's just kind of biting everybody else in the ass because you just simply can't spend. And unless you're making that commercial money, that sponsorship money, and most teams in the Premier League aren't. And it's one of those things they could also, I was looking at the TV deals, they can make it more bottom heavy. Like, give more of the TV money to the lower teams because we know that they're not going to make money of it. And that will allow them to be able to spend more to make the league more competitive, which in theory would make better television.
Yeah.
But that's not what they want. We all know that. It's not what they want. They want the top to stay the top.
Yeah, I think a better method for financial fair play, and don't get me wrong, I get why they're doing it. They want to make it fair. They want to make it so that you're going to have crazy owners come in and spend loads of money they don't have. I don't know, could they do like a, you know, the owners have to put money in escrow? So if they're saying, we're paying X amount for a player, he's going to get X amount a week for 3 years, you have to put that money in escrow. and so to prove that you have it, so the club doesn't collapse. I don't know what it could be. Yeah, you know what I mean. And it's you can spend what you have as long as you have it, type thing. You know, you look at Newcastle. They should be competing at the top now. They've got a bigger. They're backed by an entire oil state, but they're not allowed to. For what reason? But they've got the money. They're not protecting anyone, are they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's insane, and it's unfortunate for everybody, because I'm just the petty person I am. It just brings joy to me now, seeing everybody realizing it. Yes, there are people still like, nah, City, you're dirty cheats. But it's just like, no, man. I mean, sure, but I feel like everybody's dirty cheats. Like, bro, are you saying everybody's abstaining from just like, even if it, like, any edge? Like, you're telling that that's what it takes to win. You got to try to, by any means necessary sometimes. So it's just like, why are we getting on this whole, like, holier than thou brigade for billionaires? I don't know. It's just, it's not that deep sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the history of the Premier League. So the Premier League itself, when they tried to start the Super League a couple of seasons ago, Premier League was up in arms. And it's like, well, that's exactly what you did. You just did it in one country. You look at Blackburn, bought a title. Nobody cared about that. Newcastle spent £15 million on Alan Shearer in 95 or 96. That's probably the equivalent of 300 million now. Man United broke the transfer record every summer. Roman Abramovich came in to Chelsea. Chelsea were bang average before Roman Abramovich. Abramovich only bought Chelsea because they beat Liverpool in the last game of the season, and that stopped Tottenham getting in the top four. They would have bought whichever team finished in the fourth to get Champions League. It was the team they bought, and that's why he bought Chelsea. And then he's spending, Crespo, Shevchenko, Adrian Mutu, Ricardo Carvalho, Paulo Ferreira. Don't care about that. But as soon as Man City, now they take all the charges go back to 2009. Doesn't really make sense, does it?
I mean, it doesn't, but be like homers. You're supposed to be talking about Nottingham Forest. So I'm sorry. Your manager, Nuno Espirito Santo, he takes over for Steve Cooper. Shout out to Steve. He seemed like a nice bloke, but whenever the camera panned to him during a match, his face looked like someone who had been treading water for 35 minutes. And he just always looked overwhelmed. I would love to hear your parting thoughts on
Cooper. I love Steve Cooper. He'd still be in charge if it was up to me. He is the best manager we've had for 20 years, if not longer. I think he was still at a steep learning curve in the Premier League. This was still only his two at Swansea, one full at Forest. That was his kind of fifth season in management. And it's only his second full season in the Premier League. So I think he still had a lot to learn. He still had a lot to offer. He understood the fans. I know it's a cliche, but he got us. We understood him. I have never seen our ground more rocking to his songs and that kind of thing. He brought the love. Don't get me wrong. I understand why they made the change. I just wouldn't have made it personally. I'm still very surprised nobody snapped him up yet. He's going to be a very good manager one day, like an extremely good manager.
Well, how has the Espirito experience been for Nottingham supporters?
So there's probably been an uplift in performance. Not necessarily results, well, certainly not necessarily results. If the results match the performances, we'd probably be clear of relegation now. Look at our games against. We beat Newcastle and Man United over Christmas, and they were wonderful performances, really, really good. And there's a couple around there where we lost to Brentford at home for a really bad refereeing decision on a second yellow for Willy Bolly and stuff like that. And again, improved, but just not getting the results of late. It's not been great. He plays a very similar football to Steve Cooper. So Steve Cooper, when in the Championship, was kind of 3-4-3 attacking and 5-2-3 defending. Espirito Santo has strictly played 4-2-3-1 at Forest, which is a surprise because he did play the same at Wolves as Steve Cooper. The way I describe it is we're now counter-attacking on purpose. So, we kind of lull teams into... So our two best performances have been against Aston Villa, and there was one recently who I can't remember who it was against, but who attacked us? Fulham. Fulham, but we were amazing in the first, particularly the first half. And basically, what is it? These teams are attackers. We will counter-attack against you and make you look silly. But so the teams like Everton with a low block and they don't want to really attack. We've got nothing. We've got no on the ball. Where, you know, if we have the ball for a certain period of time, we're dreadful. Dreadful. The opposite. We're the opposite of Man City.
You don't. I mean, and you have a lot of players who can fly up and down that pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. It makes sense.
Yeah. I think, you know, like you mentioned Gio Reyna earlier. So he played against Everton on Sunday, and he was covering for Anthony Elanga, who's coming back from injury. So he's playing right wing, and he's not a winger. He doesn't want to be there. He spent most of the time infield next to Morgan Gibbs-White, who's playing out attacking midfield, which left Nico Williams, our right back, isolated. So Nico Williams has been amazing since the turn of the year. He's probably been our best player, but he's had a really good link up with Anthony Elanga. And then as soon as Gio Reyna's not actually out there helping in 1-2s and going down the line and a bit of pace and that kind of thing, you kind of go, I feel bad for Gio Reyna because he's not going to get in unless Morgan Gibbs-White gets injured. So he's not really going to get an opportunity. But yeah, he's not a right winger either.
No, he's not. He just gets put out there.
Yes. Yeah.
But yes, Jacob did tell me this. But it's definitely not a secret now that you
have. No.
And then also, if Chelsea were average before Abramovich, then good to see them return to their roots. Let's fucking go. Yes, midfield. They are a mid-table team, you know. Yeah. Just them and United doing mid-table team things.
Yes. Well, I find it crazy. If Chelsea win their game in hand, they're level with points with Man United. Oh, in fact, no, so they didn't. They did. They lost to Arsenal last night. They lost to Arsenal last night. So they're not. Yeah. I was working in London yesterday, and I was at King's Cross Station, and it was full of people in red Arsenal shirts.
All happy. Oh, I hate it. I bumped into an Arsenal fan today, actually, and they were rocking some gear, and I was just like, I'm a City fan, and they were just kind of like glared at me for a little bit. And I was just like, yep, sorry. it's real nice. Man. It's great. Okay, well, let's talk about the roster a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
And it's kind of my favorite part because you say positive things, I ask for positive things, and then I hop on the other spectrum and I try to get you to be a little messy. So let's see if I can successfully do this. Okay. So let's start off with, you know, who do you feel has been positive, the lights leading the club this season?
I mean, there's obvious choices. There's Taiwo Awoniyi, the start of the first half of the season, is up front, who was phenomenal. Just can't stay fit, unfortunately. Chris Wood has come in and filled Taiwo Awoniyi's shoes, and again, has been phenomenal. You know, Morgan Gibbs-White on his day is, you know, could be playing for England. He's that good. It's just he needs to have more of those days. But the real shining light for me this season is kind of a flying under the radar signing has been Murillo at centre back. Mm. So a young Brazilian, we signed him from Corinthians. He only made his professional football debut last April. So he's only been playing professional football for a year.
Oh.
If he's not the best defender in the world in the next 5 years, I will eat a hat. He will be playing for a Champions League side next season. He will not be at Forest. He would slot into Man City's back four perfectly. He's still, you know, don't get me wrong, there's still things about him that he needs to improve. He's a bit green on the heavy challenges. And that kind of thing, but passing, I've never seen a better ball playing defender. You know, patience, good in possession. It's just he will be fast, can make a clearance. The amount of goal line clearances and tackles and stuff he's made this season is phenomenal. He's a £75 million defender already.
Ooh. So big Brazilian hat. Oh man,
yes,
you live stream it.
Yeah.
And then I actually appreciate you because you have given me a little bit of homework, and this is what I love about bringing guests from who support other clubs, because I especially as an American, there's so much I don't know. And I love just finding out about everything. I've been following City consistently since about 2009. But I first fell in love with them in 2001. You gave me I Believe in Miracles. I'm probably going to end up watching that tonight, tomorrow, something like that. And then I'm going to look into Murillo because I love having little like trendy picks, and I definitely will be paying attention to him on Sunday. That is if he starts. I assume
he's started almost every single game. That's how good he is. He's now played more games for us than he did for Corinthians. And we signed. I think we signed him for like £12 million. He's phenomenal.
That's so crazy. Getting him just really over a year ago. Hey, shout out. A fun thing about us is because you know we're Man City, we're Americans. I'm sure a lot of people that we reach out to, they're kind of just like, okay, we'll do your show. and you know, we understand all of the like implications and people think of City fans. And I personally love bringing people on and, you know, watching them go from, it's like, buddy, you see the vision. We're out here. We just keep our heads down. We just try to connect with people, build a real dope community. Mm-hmm. And when we get a hold of people, we get a hold of people.
Absolutely.
This is great. We'll be doing plenty of more content together, hopefully in the future.
I'd love to. Yeah. Yes. Really good.
Okay. Well, you said tons of positive things about all kinds of players. You're like, I like him. All right. Enough of that. Who has been struggling? Who has frustrated you? Who is the names that if you see it in the starting 11, your whole day's ruined?
I think probably the player that struggled the most this season has probably been Sangare. He's our record signing. I think he came in for between 30 and 35 million. I don't think... Oh, Sangare, he's come up there. I don't think he's... I don't necessarily think he's been terrible. He's just not been a £35 million record signing. I watched him play for PSV against Rangers in the Champions League qualifying before he signed for us. And I messaged JJ, our other host, to say, I can't believe it. If we sign him, we've got the next Patrick Vieira. He looked amazing. I think he struggled with the pace of the Premier League, which I think a lot of players do. He's probably struggled with being in a team. So obviously PSV are flying at the minute in Dutch football. He's probably struggled with being with a team that's down the bottom and not getting a lot of possession and that kind of thing. And obviously with AFCON as well in the middle of the season. Yes. Yeah. Obviously, he won it with Ivory Coast, which is brilliant, but you know, a bit of time out before it, out for the whole time. He was out for a bit of time after it. I'd really like to see him press on next season and become the player that I saw playing for PSV. But in terms of other ones, I think it's more been the lack of consistency. It's not really necessarily a player. It's more like Murillo has been an amazing centre-back, but he's only a young kid. He hasn't really had a dedicated centre-back partner. So we've had Felipe, who his knees are so bad, he basically doesn't train anymore. So last season, he played a lot of games, but he never trained. This season, his knees are so bad, he can't even play. Willie Bolly's had a lot of injuries and suspensions. Andrea Omar-Bamadeli's come in. We signed him from Norwich. He didn't make his debut until Nuno was in charge. He's been pretty good, but again, he's quite green. He's played not a lot of games in the Premier League. Still very young Irish defender. Same with central midfield. So Sangare's not being the best. Danilo, who can be fantastic, has been hot and cold this season. Ryan Yates is Marmite for Forest fans. You know what Marmite is?
I do know.
So he's Marmite for Forest fans. When we were in Championship, I did not like Ryan Yates at all. He's won me round, and now I'm kind of out there on my own as the only non-hater. So it's like kind of like lack of centre-back partnership, lack of central midfield partnership. Callum Hudson-Odoi is brilliant and will be brilliant, but he's still coming back from an Achilles injury, which is like 4 or 5 years ago. And you can almost see he's been a bit timid. So he's growing into it. He's getting better. Anthony Elanga, brilliant, but I don't understand why Man United sold him. If they kept Garnacho but sold Elanga, I don't get that. Divock Origi, that's been a waste. That's been an absolute waste.
When I saw him go there, because I think that was kind of – that was my real sign when I realized maybe the direction – or there wasn't a direction where you were signing. Like, you knew you had like a game plan, but no direction.
Yeah. I think also worth mentioning as well, goalkeepers. So we signed, we last season we had Dean Henderson for the first half of the season, and then he got injured in January. I was at the game, actually. He took a goal kick and basically fell forwards. I think he popped a muscle in his thigh or something around that. Yeah, he basically took a goal kick and just fell forwards. And then we had Keylor Navas, so three times Champions League winner, Keylor Navas. So they were brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Solid.
Yes.
Great. Then we were in for Henderson again, and there was, I think, you know, these are all rumours, but there's a lot of back and forth from Man United about whether it's a loan or it's permanent, or if it is a loan, when's it become permanent, and what are the factors and things like that. And basically, we give up and sign Matt Turner. I didn't know much about Matt Turner. I found out a lot about Matt Turner, and none of it's great, in my opinion.
No, it's not.
Don't get me wrong, very decent shot stopper. Probably, in my opinion, like a championship level goalkeeper, probably be pretty decent. Yes. Certainly not better than Ethan Horvath, in my opinion, another American goalkeeper who left us up permanently in January. Mm-hmm. And then we also got Odysseas Flakidimos, who is a German-born Greek goalkeeper who we got from Benfica. I thought he would be pretty decent. But he's like a really weird stat of whenever he played, he never saved a shot.
Not great.
Yeah, so it's like really low shot saving percentage, but not necessarily ones he should have saved, but like everything that went at him went in. And again, some of these were bangers or cross goal tap ins and things like that. But yeah, it was a strange situation to be in. And then we signed, we were in for a lot of goalkeepers towards the end of January. We signed Bat Seltz, who's really grown into the number one shirt. I wasn't enamored when we signed him. We linked with some much better keepers, in my opinion, like Cohen Castiles from Wolfsburg and Navas coming back. Or David De Gea on a free, because his agent is Nuno's age, super agent, you know, the Portuguese super agent who signed Ruben Neves and that. So that would have been nice. But yeah, Matt Sells has grown into the role. But it's just these little inconsistencies of kind of like Taiwo being injured and then Chris Wood coming back in and being great. Then he was out for 8 weeks. Central midfield not being settled. Elanga plays well at the start of the season and gets injured. Hudson-Odoi is injured, then plays well. They'll have them both at the same time. It's just these little things have added up. And then, you know, you chuck on a four-point deduction and that kind of thing. And it's, yeah.
And that is kind of the thing. It's been a struggle. But if you take out the points deduction, Nottingham Forest, I feel, would be like clear and safe from relegation.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And because you could draw out the season, have the occasional loss, and you're still fine because, you know, Luton Town, Burnley, and Sheffield, they're going to lose. They're going to lose more than they draw. You'd be fine. Yeah. It's not the sexiest, but you would live to fight another season.
It's not about sexy at this point, is it?
At all, right? but overall, what is your thoughts? Has been your thoughts on Nottingham Forest's performance over this year's Premier League campaign?
I think there are a lot of Premier League seasons in the past where we would probably already be relegated. I think we've been not great. Let's put it that way. I think if you give us the points back, I think you're right. I think we are safe. I think that put us 5 points clear of Luton, and seven of Burnley. And I don't see them making that up. It's going to be our last game of the season is away at Burnley, which is going to be very interesting. I think overall the season, I think it's typical second season syndrome in the Premier League. I think a lot of the time in the Premier League, there's a thing of like the bottom six of the Premier League wouldn't get in the top six of the Championship. They just happen to be in the Premier League. And I think that's one of those seasons. You look at the Championship, I don't know if you have, but like Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, Ipswich, all absolutely flying. And I feel like all four of those would be better than four or five, maybe even six of the bottom of the Premier League. So it's, you know, it's not been a great season, but it's not been anything I haven't expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we have their Red Half of Sheffield, the Sheffield podcast, and whenever we talk with him, he is just, he's miserable. He truly is just us out of the Premier League. I honestly kind of just never even want to be in this league again. Every time we come up here, it's misery.
Like, yeah.
Stay in the championship and just vibe and be a mid-table team there and have fun. And I, you know, I kind of respect that.
I was talking with JJ about this very recently. So that the other host of the podcast, and we're basically saying, like, if somebody offered me, we get relegated, but we get top nine finishes every season. You never get promoted. So you finish anywhere between third and ninth. So you have a season where you win more than you lose. You might get a trip to Wembley in the playoffs. And kind of every 5 years, we go to Wembley, the League Cup or FA Cup final or semi-finals or something like that. Would you take it and never go in the Premier League again? And we both said yes. Because it's kind of a poison chalice at this point. You know, we've gone up. We're living the dream. We've signed 100,000 players. We've spent billions of, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds. And all we've got for it is two relegation scraps and points deductions. And, you know, and now what's quite interesting about the whole VAR scandal at the weekend is I think Sky and PGMOL and the FA and the Premier League expected everyone to turn on us. And I think it's actually backfired and gone the other way. I think everybody's on side with Forrest.
Yo, definitely. Obviously, the media, the people in the power, they're all just like, how dare they? But, you know, kind of the people, they're like, oh, no, I'm kind of with them. It was a little shenanigans. And the calls, VAR this year has not been great. And it was given to us as the savior of bad calls, when instead they have now just used it to justify their bad calls. It's not great.
No, I think it was implemented poor. It was rushed in, I think. Mm-hmm. Implemented poorly. I don't know if you watch any rugby.
I actually grew up playing rugby, second row.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, same here. But yeah, their TMO or VAR is perfect, in my opinion. It's brilliant. There are other sports around the world. You look at baseball, theirs is good. You challenge it. They call to the little black room in New York where nobody knows where it is. It's done so well in so many other sports. And they rushed theirs in. They didn't ask any questions. They didn't ask for help, which other sports would have done. And it's just poorly used. I think they need to strip it back and start again, in my opinion. I think they should go with goal line technology and the semi-automated offsides and scrap the rest of it until they've got it working properly.
The thing is, I don't even trust that they can do the semi-automated offsides correctly. Like that's kind of just what they have done to me. They have, and that's the whole general aspect. It's like they have corroded so much by just nonsense, silliness, full of themselves, confident. Like it just all this selfishness. When they should be protecting the league, trying to uplift their teams, set the best environment. And I feel like the last few years, they've just been kind of setting out to either make it fair, which it can never be fair. Unfortunately, that's kind of sports. There's always going to be someone who's more technically gifted, faster, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like it will never be fair. And yeah, and by doing that, you're starting to just alienate everybody, and everybody's getting annoyed, and all the things that we could just joke about, like the bad refereeing in England and stuff like that. And now it's just the prevailing topic is, all right, there were four bad calls in six games today. Let's cover them all instead of talking about the beautiful football that was played.
Yeah, absolutely. I for me as well. So, you know, play football up until I pulled ankle ligaments about 4 weeks ago. So I've only just been able to walk again. So I'm officially retired from football. My wife will kill me. but yeah, like the beauty of football, the reason it's played by every country in every part of the world, is because the game at the top was always the same as the game at the bottom. All you needed was a ball and two goals. That's all you need. You didn't even necessarily need two goals. And then you look at it now and you go, well, Premier League, they've got VAR and they've got goal line tech and they've got, you know, all this, and then Championship and all those. So in the UK, the EFL, so Championship, League One, League Two, they've all got goal line tech as well. And so it's just getting further and further away from this game at the top being different from the game at the bottom. And whereas in the past, the only difference was the quality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I longer term, I can see people getting turned off it.
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, I would much rather go to a minor league baseball game, things like that, than I would go to a professional team, because obviously the ticket prices are better. The energy there is normally less frenetic. Usually the uniforms are better. For some reason, yeah. I really enjoy minor league teams' jerseys. And yeah, just I enjoy that. And that's also how you get a real understanding of the area, because you know, the big teams, the major teams, you get people who support them, they travel, blah blah blah, you get other people who are just there for the experience and stuff like that. Those minor league, lower level teams, people are there, they're there because they want to be there, you know, they love that team. Just something about that. Like, I'm also a heckler, I love like talking smack, that especially that's how I was as a rugby player. So being able, you get away with that more going to like minor league and stuff. I mean, not in, obviously in football. Well, I learned that you just talk shit no matter what league you're in.
Yeah.
But in America, with our sports, yes, there's like screaming people, but I feel like it's more understanding when you get to like the amateur, and unless you're just a freaking crazy person.
Yeah. I think there's a bit of a grassroots football revival in the UK at the minute, because I think there are quite a lot of fans getting a bit frustrated with you know, the upper echelons of football. I know, like my very local team is a team called Bayford United, and they've got a wonderful ground, really nice setting. They get a really hardcore following, kind of home and away, which is wonderful to see. So yeah, they do great things. Like, so if Forest are playing early or late kickoff, they'll put it on the TV. So like, come and watch Forest, and then watch us. And stuff like that, which is great. I feel like that's happening all the way up and down the country.
Yes, I love that. That's the dream. I have yet to be to England, and the goal is I'm saving up because I want to stay there for like a month, because I just want to travel and go to naturally the big clubs, but I want to go to every level that I can, a team in every tier, lots of rugby, of course, all the beer, and just experience. I want to try all the food. I'm a big food person, a huge food person. So I'm just, I just want to go in and immerse myself as much as I can.
I'll pre-warn you, the food on for sale at football stadiums is nothing. You know, like, so I've been to New York once, and I went to watch the Mets play, and the food there was, you know, kind of, I think baseball food's well known for being outstanding, isn't it, type thing. Football food is not that. It's not that.
Hey, I follow Footy Scran. I basically will just choose my football clubs that I visit based off of that account.
Yes, do that. Absolutely. Yeah. I think like the best thing you can get at Forest is a pucker pie. So
yeah. Wait, what is that?
It's like a puff pastry pie, like a round, just you get I don't know, like chicken curry flavor, or meat and potato, or cheese, leek and onion. Yeah.
See, I grew up Southern, and pot pies are a very big thing that we do, except for they're like giant. They're just like giant versions of your pies. And I make those a lot, especially during the summer. That's kind of my thing that I make.
Yeah, I think they're the same thing. I think roughly the same thing.
Just a giant version.
Giant.
Let's talk about the previous five games for Nottingham. I'm sure this isn't the most exciting, so we can kind of getting through these. One win, a draw, and three losses. Lost to Everton 2-0, a draw with Wolves 2-2, losing to Tottenham 3-1, beat Fulham 3-1, and then a narrow loss to Brighton on the road 1-0. What can you say about this?
You know, it's an odd one. You kind of, and I think the game before that as well was Crystal Palace. So you kind of, you look at it and you go, you know, Fulham, great, great win. Best performance of the season by a mile. Wonderful. But they attacked us. Brighton, I think we probably should have got something out of that game. We weren't bad. But, you know, to lose 1-0 away to Brighton, who were flying this season, isn't the worst thing in the world. Spurs, we should have been ahead in the first half. Clear. Chris Wood missed an open, or he hit the post, but he missed an open goal. We should have been just gone. And then they scored two wonderful goals at the end of the first half and start of the second half, or both in the second half. Then there's the loss to Everton, which, you know, VAR. Not saying we played well, we didn't play well at all, but VAR, you know, we should have had a penalty. We should have had two penalties at 0-0. There's one penalty at 0-0, one penalty at 1-0, two penalties at 1-0 that would have changed the game completely, or could have changed the game completely. And then the game before that was Wolves draw, which, you know, we played pretty well, particularly in the first half. We don't have that defensive solidity, and we concede goals. Set pieces, we are atrocious. So, yeah, it's nothing more or less than I would have expected from the last five games, if I'm being honest. But I think the Wolves game was a chance missed, and I think we probably, with how well we played in the first half against Tottenham, it was a chance missed to at least get a point.
So it's good to see that City could probably score a goal from set pieces. This has been the first year in easily four, five, maybe even six seasons that. Probably since like Vincent Kompany has left.
Yeah.
Since I was like, yeah, we're good at set pieces. We're great. Because, you know, we had Vinny or Aguero and Silva. We had players who those were their things. And I'm not saying we don't, but we got our Vincennes, our new set piece coach. He's been amazing. He's been brilliant. Mm-hmm. There have been multiple goals we have scored from set pieces that everybody specifically runs to him. You thank him. Pep has said it in interviews. So the way that we are, we love giving credit to, if they say it's him, give him the credit. So shout out to you, Vicens. Please don't leave, even though everybody who we bring in and starts getting the slightest bit of acknowledgement gets stolen.
Yeah. I think City set piece is actually a really interesting topic, because so when Pep first came in, he loved the second ball into the box. So, mm-hmm. you know, roll it out, whichever way, you know, to the edge of the box and back out, or to the short man and that kind of thing. Because, you know, in football, it's the hardest thing to defend is the second ball from a set piece, because you can't practice for it. You don't know where that ball's going to land. You don't know how it's going to come in. But Pep's really abandoned that in the last two and a half seasons. He's really gone back to a traditional put the ball into the box, which is it's very not Pep. I always find it surprising, always, especially after the first kind of 2.5-3 seasons where of we play it short, we try something a little fancy type thing, to go for more traditional set pieces is very, very odd.
I think that's the Englishification of Pep. That is him adjusting, because when we first started, it was the end of the season. So I remember we quickly went into the summer, and I didn't want to go into a break. So that's half the reason how content season started. That's what we call our summer shows, is content season. And I had on a good friend of mine, Acid House. He's a United fan, and he grew up from the area. So he's exactly what you think. I loved having him on because he's a homie. He's just like, the entire time I'm having the best time. I'm laughing. But I had so many City fans who are English, and they were like, why did you have this asshole on? I hear people just like him every day. And I had apologized to them. But American fans like me, they don't get this experience. We don't. Yeah. And honestly, when him and I first became friends, I had to like adjust to it because it's just so intense and he's just always talking crap. And even if it doesn't make any sense, he's just talking crap. I love it though. I love the energy. Good people, sweet people, sure. I actually have no idea where I'm going. I just, United fans are the best and the worst. So let's just sit in there. I put starting 11 prediction in here, but I'm awful at them. I don't enjoy doing them. And we don't have to because I have no idea who Pep's going to play. I know Haaland's not going to be there, so obviously that's Alvarez. Like, there's things that you could use, but
I think Foden's injured as well, isn't he?
Yeah, Foden. Well, he said Foden is back.
Oh, I thought Foden Haaland didn't train, but John Stones is back. I thought that's why I
might have misread it. I thought it was Haaland isn't back, and Foden and Stones are back in training.
I'm sure I read it was Haaland and Foden both missed training. Not that they're out, but they missed training.
Yes. And it's going to be, yes, Scarf, it's definitely going to be a Rico Lewis game. We need lots of rest. I it's crazy for me to even say, I think we need to rest Rodri and
Kyle Walker as well. I watched the Real Madrid game and he's got, in my opinion, he's gone from looking like the best right back in the world to looking semi brain dead in the last 2 months. I don't know what's because he's been injured. He's had a few niggling injuries.
So he actually needs to come back. That's kind of the thing. I think that's kind of what it is he's just struggling. He wasn't, I mean, if we're going to keep it honest, he wasn't doing the best. And I think Pep's system with the possession, yes, the whole idea is to keep other teams from scoring because you have to have the ball to score. Mm-hmm. But we're using Walker in a more offensive position, but he's supposed to be our defensive support. There are times where he's just as far up as like Phil and Haaland and all those people. He's not able to do what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've also been very messy where I'm gone out and said that half the reason why Kyle Walker is getting all this stuff is that was that conversation him and Pep had having sushi at the bar, was him being like, look, I'll put you in more. I know you want to go to Bayern. I know Bayern wants you because they want to give you more responsibility. I'll give you more responsibility. We'll move the thing around you. You're going to get voted captain. Oops, sorry. You know, they made him feel good and made him feel welcomed and warm. And we just kind of have to go with the season. It is what it is. Yeah.
Do you think City could go in for somebody like Jeremy Frimpong in the summer?
I would love that.
Bring him back.
Yes. I would personally love that. Pep uses our right backs, left backs as wing backs. But when you talk to City fans who call themselves tacticos, the idea of a right wing back doesn't fit Pep's game.
Yeah, I see that.
And I guess I get that, but for what he wants people to do, Frimpong, yes, he would need to get a little bit better defensively, but he's young enough to do so.
And quick enough.
And just talented on the ball. Our whole thing is having the ball, passion. Same thing with Doku. Doku wanted to run and run and run, and Pep had to teach him, hey, sometimes you got to pause.
Same thing he did with Sterling.
Exactly. But Sterling got him at 25 instead of 21 like Doku. Yeah. But he could do the same thing with Frimpong. Scar, if you know the vibes. our thoughts on Doku when he came in, he was hyped and looked good, but I hear less. I tweeted the moment we got him. It was like 2 weeks after his first match. Please be patient with him. He's going to be amazing. The moment he was announced, I looked into what he was doing. People, because he was injured for a bit, and it was a big injury, so people were very worried, and that takes some time. And they're like, he's injured. Yeah, he's coming back from a huge injury. That takes time. He's young. He probably wanted to get back on and start playing. Yeah. And Ligue 1 is super physical, like incredibly physical. Like, people think the Premier League is physical. Watch Ligue 1. Yeah. Like, watch Bundesliga. Sometimes these tackles these people are having are insane. Yeah. I've loved him. I've seen the promise. People wanted like a Mahrez type, and I try to tell people Doku is a Mahrez type. Just because he's faster, yes, but what Mahrez does is he takes players on. He dribbles. He sets up chances for his teammates. In the end, that's what Doku does. He just does it with more pace. And people just kind of get so lost in the obvious, the minutiae, the contextual gets lost on people. And I love what Pep has been able to do with them. He's moved them around. He's trying some things, but he's now looking very comfortable on the right. He's looking very comfortable on the left. His finishing product, he's able to find his players a little bit better. He's looking up more. I have seen so much growth from him. And anybody who doesn't rate him, that's just how I know you don't know ball. And I hate that phrase, but it's when that's usually when I use that phrase, I am like truly insulting you. It's just like,
So it's funny actually you say that about Doku, because we watched Forrest played Stade Rennes at St. George's Park in preseason friendly, and he was still at Rennes. And me and JJ were watching it and kind of talking to you, watched him in particular going, wow, that is going to be some player. Because I think Rennes paid quite a lot of money for him from Anderlecht when he was very young. I think they paid upwards of 20 million for him. But yeah, I think he's going to be a wonderful player. I think he's going to be kind of Raheem Sterling, who can also pass, if that makes sense. I think that's where he's going to end up.
Who can also pass.
Yeah, I think with the City, I wonder if Frimpong comes in, does that mean that Vardiol sits back more? Because like...
I would like that.
Yeah, shift it, because the minute it's shifted so that the right back, because Kyle Walker's been injured, the right back sits in. If it's Akanji or John Stones, they sit in for the three, and then Vardiol pushes forward if they swap it around. I do like Vardiol. Vardiol's come very, very good. The last, since Christmas, he's been very, very good. But yeah, I think Jack Grealish as well is somebody who gets a lot of hate for no reason. I don't think any player has bought into Pep's system more than Jack Grealish.
1,000%.
I think he is Pep's. I think if you ask Pep which player gets it, it's Jack.
That's our Gucci Puma. That's our Gucci Puma.
Yeah. I don't know. It took him a season or three quarters of a season to get up to speed with it. But he's
understandably. We know he's a sweetheart. We know he's a baller, and we know he's a himbo. Pep's system is a lot, and it's understandable that it took a bit for him to kind of get it together for sure. Doku, he's just and it's really cool that you all see him. What told me he was going to be special was I watched a video back when it was like 3 years ago. He was doing an interview, and I think he was just asked about his mentality on the pitch, and he said, "I want to kill them." Like, obviously not really, but I want to kill them. I want them to be miserable. I want them to hate their life. Like, I want them to see me and regret them ever playing football. Like, he was, it was OD. It was so intense. And I was like, let's go. That's what the greats have to have. That is that mentality. Like, I want to ruin your life.
It's
not great, obviously, like for the person you're about to play against, but that's how you win.
I think, I don't know anything about his background, but, I think you find that with a lot of sports people where they come from a tougher background, shall we say. Mm-hmm. They have that mentality because, they've lived through tough times. You don't see a lot of blue blood elite athletes, in my opinion. People who come from wealthy backgrounds don't tend to make good sports people because they don't have the hunger and determination. They just don't. They don't have it subconsciously. You could choose to work hard and type thing, but you don't have that Michael Jordan dog in you, do you? You know what I mean? I don't particularly like basketball, but I've watched The Last Dance 5 times because it's compelling.
It's compelling television. Well, entertainment. There we go.
Wonderful. It is wonderful.
Well, Saka will probably fulfill that, making them miserable mentally on Sunday with takeover if he doesn't block him.
Yeah. So this is the first time me and JJ have been to a game together this year on Sunday.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so there's a few games where... So the last game, we had tickets to the Wolves game that we had to get rid of because I couldn't walk, basically. Pulled ankle ligaments, so I couldn't walk, so he didn't go. Well, I could walk, but I couldn't go upstairs. That was the problem. I didn't really fancy going up on my hands and knees at the ground. And then there was a couple of games where JJ's had to cancel. So, yeah, it'd be nice to see him and as he says, have a few pints. I think he means a lot.
I mean, naturally, you know, got to be humble. He didn't say how many. He just had a few, and a few can mean more to him than a few would mean for others.
Exactly.
Before I get you out of here with a score prediction, what is your perspective on Morgan Gibbs-White?
That's a great question. I think Morgan Gibbs-White could be somebody. So Man City signed Mateus Nunes to replace Gundogan, didn't they? I didn't really watch him very much at Wolves. I would trust that Pep and Tiki would get it right. I haven't really seen it in him whenever I've seen him play. I think somebody like Morgan Gibbs-White would have been exceptional for Man City, where he is going to have a lot of possession. He's going to have a lot of time to express himself. I think he'd really, 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 really come good. But for Forest, he makes a lot of mistakes in like the three-quarter position in our half. So if we're counter-attacking or we're bringing the ball up and it's just before the halfway line, he'll do something. And if it comes off, it's brilliant. It's amazing. He's a wonderful footballer. But if it doesn't come off, they've got the ball back really high up the pitch and it costs us, or could cost us. And last season, he managed to stamp that out of his game towards the second half of last season. This season, it's still been there all season. That's why he's not had as good a season. But some of his passing, his flair, his finishing, he really could be an incredible player. There's rumours that Newcastle are in for him as well. I say this about so many players with great potential, but I'd love to see what Pep would be able to do with it. I'd love to see it. Same with Murillo as well. I know I mentioned him earlier, but I think because he's a left-footed centre-back, so he could do that left-back, he'd do centre-back, especially if the left-back's not going to be bombing on forwards. I think he could even probably play in Pep's midfield. It's one of the things you watch him playing. I try not to get attached because I know he won't be there. he's going to be gone. I just hope we get a good amount of money for him. Basically, he's like, I will follow his career forever because I genuinely think he'll be incredible.
Dope. Well, what are your thoughts on this match? How do you see it going? If I could get a score prediction out of you.
I can only see it going one way. I can only see City winning, really. Especially, you know, they're in that mode, aren't they? They're in Terminator Shark Team mode, aren't they? You know, with the blip at Real Madrid again, they didn't even lose that game, did they? Got knocked out, but they didn't lose. I'd like to think it'd be low scoring because we've really got to concentrate on goal difference. I'll go 2-0 Man City. It could be anything really, because if you guys come and attack us and we can counter attack, we do, you know, if you, I don't know if you've watched the highlights of us against Fulham, watch them, and if you attack us, there's a risk, let's put it that way. That kind of exactly how we want to play. We want you to attack us, but I think if you start drown, if we can't get that ball back off you, we're gonna drown real quick.
I mean, the way to beat us is counterattacking football, coming at us. 12 games, first giving up the first goal in the match. That is now a Pep career high at Man City. So, you know, stats, the season, patterns have said you will score first. But our last 7 matches, when that has happened, we are unbeaten. 6 wins and a draw. So, like, it upset me tons at the beginning of the season because they weren't able to find their way out of it. Now we are able to find our way out of it. Losing to Real Madrid really pissed them off. I honestly think just barely beating Chelsea also pissed our players off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited for this match. And they now have time off because of the Champions League. I don't love it, but I also don't hate it.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Brighton as well, haven't they, before the game on Sunday, which is going to be an interesting game. I think City will win, but you don't know what Brighton's going to turn up, do you?
They're so injured. Like, everybody's basically out. I was looking at their list. So that has me hopeful on top of, me supporting Manchester City. I should be hopeful. But when like 8 out of your normal starting 11 are missing, you feel a little bit better about your opponent.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Brighton are a very interesting team. They're very similar to West Ham. I have a really close friend from childhood who's a West Ham fan. And I see them both very similar. They're, having decent seasons, and their club's on the upwards trajectory. But they're always like a 30 goal a season striker away from that next step. Yeah. Brighton are great. I think they're ran really well. They're purchasing, they're director of football and all that kind of thing. But if you're reliant on Danny Welbeck up front, you're never going to cross that. You're never going to cross that line. And it's the same with West Ham. While they're still reliant on Mikel Antonio, wonderful player, great player. They're top goal scorer in the Premier League. You are never going to cross that line to take the next step while you're still reliant on that kind of striker.
Or one. So we have an inside running joke in our show. Okay. One of our co-hosts, his name is Sharpie Charlie, and he has his own math style. And he just doesn't – he'll be like, let's say City – it started off with him being like City will win by 3. So if it's 3-0, 4-1, 5-2, I don't know. Yeah. But it has now evolved to the Sharpie clean sheet. So like a 4-1 win is a 3-0 clean sheet to us.
Okay.
All we want is a clean sheet and we can't get it. So this is kind of like the closest thing. We always allow one. So if we allow one, that is a Manchester City clean sheet. It just is what it is.
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
And even though we're winning, this is, and it's like, why are you still trying to find little joys in things? But there's just, this is the sicko in me. I'm just like, I just want a clean sheet. Am I a dinosaur? The answer is yes. Clean sheets are the thing of the past, Grandpa. Go to bed.
Yeah. So I used to work with somebody years and years and years ago, and him and his brother used to play FIFA at lunchtime. And one of the things they always described was a win by 3 or more goals, it was officially, technically a lesson. You got a lesson in football. So that's one of the ones I use. So, if it was 4-1, it'd be a Sharpie clean sheet and a lesson in football.
I love that, baby. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I'm going to get you out of here, but before you go, let's please plug yourself, plug Miss Roland, let listeners, viewers, Shady Gang know how they can find you and your show and support.
Yes, so we're at Miss Roland Pod on Twitter and I believe on Instagram as well. Miss Roland Podcast.com or Miss Roland.com, I think, is our website. JJ's going to kill me for this. JJ's also got a clothing brand, which I'm wearing right now. Which
let's go.
It's Heavy Metal Football. .co.uk, and he's done some Forest designs. He's done a England for the Euros, and he's going to be doing more clubs, more countries, and all that kind of thing as well. So it's a kind of an alternate football fan vibe. And he's a brilliant graphic designer, and it's the reason our stuff looks so good all the time. But we release kind of every week after the games. You can find us on Spotify, Twitter, YouTube. We love talking football. I like to see it as I would have this conversation with JJ anyway, so why not record it? Because if we're going to talk about it, let's just put it out there and people might agree, people might not. But it's something we just love doing.
Appreciate it. I'm a big fan of positive affirmations, so thank you. It was a good watch till Jacob butchered the social plug. He called it.
I meant to ask him before to send it me so I could read it out. He doesn't let me do it, so I'm not allowed to.
Right? It's just like, follow us on social media, things.
Well, normally on our podcast, I go, JJ's got something to show you, and he puts it all on screen because he's fancy. So
I love it. Oh, well, sorry, we're not that fancy. Maybe that'll be an evolution to our production for next year. Well, Shady Gang, we will be back tomorrow. Oh, for our Thursday night lit stream. 7 p.m. tonight, at night, we have three guests. They come on one at a time, and we just talk the latest and greatest in football craziness. No filters needed, no thoughts held back. We embrace the chaos in that show, and our guests for that show are very chaotic in the best way. It's going to be fantastic. And then on Sunday, City Men and Women play, so that means two kickoff shows. City Men play first, I think. That kickoff show is at 9:30, and then the women's, our kickoff show for the Big Boo Boo Baddies, is at 11:15, and this is at Central Time. Obviously, check our social media at Shades of Blue Network. All our information is there. We have a link tree. Click it. It's got you. And you know the vibes. Shady Gang. Shady Gang. Shady Gang.